The Beat Podcast is brought to you by Nutritia and is designed for healthcare professionals only.
Avril Flynn, a midwife and educator, is asking the questions on this episode.
So you're very welcome to the Beat Podcast. My name is Avril Flynn. I'm a midwife based in Ireland and a passionate educationalist. Today, we'll be talking about COVID-19 and vitamin D. As we're aware, vitamin D has several important functions. Perhaps the most vital are regulating the absorption of minerals and facilitating normal immune system function. The normal immune system function has been brought into sharp spotlight with COVID-19 and us as healthcare professionals trying to encourage patients to improve their immune systems and general health. I am delighted to have Professor Zulf Mughal with us here today. He's a consultant in paediatric bone disorders and an honorary clinical professor in child health at the Royal Manchester Children's Hospital. He has written over 150 peer-reviewed scientific papers, invited reviews and book chapters, and in 2015, he was awarded the prestigious Charles Lamenda Award for his outstanding contribution to paediatric bone research. We couldn't have a more qualified or better expert. Zulf, you're so welcome to the Beat Podcast.
Thank you very much, Avril. I look forward to discussing vitamin D with you.
Absolutely. So to get to the basics, how do we get our vitamin D as humans?
So it's often known as the sunshine vitamin D. So unlike other vitamins, so for example, vitamin C, which you can only get from the diet, the most important source of vitamin D is that produced by the action of sunlight, in fact, the ultraviolet B radiation in the sunlight landing on the skin. And this then leads to formation of vitamin D3 or cholecalciferol. So sunshine is by far the most important source, but because of where we live, the latitude of United Kingdom, we only get the right form of sunshine for about half the year. So from mid-September to mid-March, we live in vitamin D winter, and therefore we don't make any vitamin D during those months. And of course, atmospheric pollution, cloud cover, wearing concealing clothing, and in the COVID-19 lockdown period, you know, the not going out and shielding has further exacerbated this issue, because people, even during summer months, were told not to go out as much so that they were not exposed to the SARS-CoV virus.
So supplementation and fortification with vitamin D is vitally important, particularly because of our latitude in the Northern Hemisphere.
That's a very good point. So the other source of vitamin D is, of course, diet. But the main dietary sources, natural dietary sources of vitamin D are oily fish, mackerel, salmon, tuna, sardines. But many children don't actually eat this fish because they actually have very strong tastes. There is small amount of vitamin D in eggs and also in animal liver. In the UK, margarine is fortified with vitamin D, and then there is voluntary fortification of few foods, but there is very little mandatory fortification of, for example, milk in USA and Canada. Now, the infant formulas by law are fortified, and certain breakfast cereals and infant foods are fortified with vitamin D. And therefore, you know, getting your vitamin D from diet becomes a challenge, and therefore supplements, as you quite rightly say, becomes very important, particularly during winter and autumn months when there is very little cutaneous vitamin D synthesis.
And particularly for babies and toddlers, therefore, you know, getting the right fortification through their fortified cereals or infant and toddler milks would be really important.
I think that is correct. Whilst we're talking about infants and toddlers, I think it's important to state that at birth, a baby's vitamin D levels are totally dependent on mother's vitamin D status. So most of the vitamin D gets transferred in the third trimester of the pregnancy. If the mother is vitamin D deficient, then that baby is going to be born vitamin D deficient as well. And whilst it's every healthcare professional's goal to promote breast milk, which is the best source of nutrition for a term infant, Mother Nature unfortunately did not put vitamin D in breast milk. So a liter of breast milk only contains about 80 international units or 2 micrograms of vitamin D. So an infant who drinks, let's say, about 750 to 800 mils of breast milk will only get a fraction of the recommended intake of vitamin D, which in the United Kingdom is about 340 to 400 international units, or 8.5 micrograms to 10 micrograms daily. So the perfect storm in developing consequences of vitamin D deficiency is being born to a vitamin D deficient mother and then breastfeeding that baby and not providing supplements. And this then leads to many of the consequences of vitamin D in these infants. And, you know, this is something I've seen over the years, you know.
And therefore the chain continues. You have a vitamin D deficient mother, then an infant, and continuing on, if the deficiency was there in pregnancy, it is in all likelihood without supplementation going to continue into infancy and onwards.
Absolutely. So I think it's crucially important to supplement both the mother and the infant after birth. And I should also state that, so in the recent British Paediatric Surveillance Unit Nutritional Survey, which we published last year, we had a number of infants who presented with rickets who were formula fed. And these were infants who were from Black, Asian, and ethnic minority group. And it's likely that they were born to mothers who were deficient in vitamin D. And even though they were given formula milk, that the vitamin D in formula milk was insufficient to protect them from the severe vitamin D deficiency that these infants had inherited, in quotation marks, from their mothers, emphasizing the importance of supplementation of mothers as well as infants, you know.
That's fascinating. And how are the individual's body stores of vitamin D actually measured?
Okay, so the vitamin D that we produce in the skin or ingest from dietary sources or supplements gets converted in the liver to a substance known as 25-hydroxyvitamin D. In humans, 25-hydroxyvitamin D is the best way of assessing an individual's vitamin D stores. So when we want to check somebody's vitamin D status, we go to our GP or to the hospital-based practitioner, and he or she will then measure that individual's serum 25-hydroxyvitamin D, which reflects body stores of vitamin D.
And presumably, you know, you don't show signs, you know, rickets would be a very advanced form of disease, but you might be deficient and be unaware of it.
That is a very, very good point. So if you go around measuring 25-hydroxyvitamin D, then it's quite common, even in asymptomatic individuals. So the National Diet and Nutrition Service, which have been done in the United Kingdom, have shown that vitamin D deficiency or subclinical vitamin D deficiency is widespread. So between 20 to 40% of children and adolescents have serum levels of 25-hydroxyvitamin D less than 25 nanomoles per liter, which the second scientific committee on nutrition regarded as a cutoff value below which one starts getting musculoskeletal health consequences. But the point that you make about rickets, when does rickets arise, is a very good one, because I think perhaps we should see what is rickets. So rickets is a bone softening condition that children develop. And why does it develop? It develops because the infant or the child is not able to absorb calcium and phosphorus from the diet into the bloodstream, and that low calcium and phosphorus then leads to impaired mineralization of the growing ends of the long bones. And as the child starts to stand, he or she starts developing bowed legs or knock knees, depending on how old they are, and other consequences of vitamin D deficiency, such as bone pain, misery. In adolescence, it can cause a poor development of the pelvis, causing pelvic outlet obstruction, which in subsequent years then may lead to obstructed childbirth. So there are many consequences of this, but the combination of low vitamin D and low dietary calcium is quite important. So again, in this survey that we published, the Rickett survey that we published last year, we emphasize the role of calcium in the diet, which is particularly important because children who have food allergies may not take the cow's milk protein-free formula that has been prescribed because of the taste or for whatever reason. And these children often end up getting less calcium as well as vitamin D deficiency. And again, that combination leads to there is an increased risk of developing rickets.
So the deficiency goes glove in hand, basically, with calcium and vitamin D.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And what are the recommendations for vitamin D intake and supplementation? So what's the ORDA?
So the recommendations from Public Health England and other sort of bodies is that in the first year of life, one should take 340 international units or 8.5 micrograms to 400 international units to 10 micrograms of vitamin D daily. After the age of 1 year and adulthood, it is 400 units or 10 micrograms of vitamin D.
So it's quite a significant amount.
Yes, it is. I think, again, that is the level to maintain the serum 25 hydroxy vitamin D at about 25 nanomoles per liter, which is it's not to sort of push the levels to very high levels. This is for public health levels. So 97.5% of the population, if they take those type of supplements, should maintain their serum levels above 25 nanomoles per liter, and thereby hopefully protect them from musculoskeletal consequences of vitamin D deficiency.
Is it possible, if you are deficient, by taking supplementation that you can get your levels back to normal and then, you know, maintain?
So it depends on the level of or the severity of your deficiency. So if somebody has come in with very severe vitamin D deficiency, presenting with osteomalacia in adulthood, which is the equivalent of rickets in an adult, presenting with bone pain, muscle weakness, or rickets in childhood, I think you need to first of all treat and rectify the severe deficiency and then maintain or prevent recurrence of this problem by providing enough supplements.
So there's been a huge increased interest in vitamin D in light of the COVID-19 pandemic. Can you tell me a little bit about this?
Yes, so the interest has arisen for two reasons. The first one is, as I mentioned previously, that during the COVID-19 lockdown restrictions and shielding has limited individuals, some individuals' exposure to cutaneous, to ultraviolet B radiation that we get from exposure to sun. And therefore, some people have been put at risk of developing vitamin D deficiency. The second interest has been whether vitamin D deficiency might contribute to individuals being more susceptible to COVID-19 infections, or whether it may cause more severe COVID-19 illness. Now, there is circumstantial evidence linking low body stores of vitamin D and increase perhaps severity of COVID-19 disease. In other studies, when they've controlled for all the confounding variables such as obesity, smoking, etc., that relationship has become less secure. And I think the important thing is that we need to wait for the results of well-designed, adequately powered, randomized controlled trials, which are underway to really clarify whether vitamin D adequacy will attenuate the COVID-19 illness.
And that's been the fascinating thing with COVID-19, hasn't it? It's the fact that it's been such a fast-moving, you know, subject that has affected every single individual, both personally, professionally, and every other way. So it's really put it into sharp focus. And I suppose everybody's looking for the miracle.
Everybody wants the cure for or something which will help COVID-19. And thankfully, we now have some excellent agents which are available, as well as the vaccines, which are now, and as we know, the UK is doing extremely well with over 10 million people this morning who have been vaccinated. But coming back to vitamin D deficiency, the individuals who have been disproportionately been affected by COVID-19 illness, that is the BAME community, people who are obese, people who have hypertension, are also, there is an overlap between these risk factors and risk factors for vitamin D deficiency. So people who are dark-skinned, people who are obese, are at increased risk of developing vitamin D deficiency, particularly if they live in northern latitudes like United Kingdom, for the reasons which we've discussed before. So there's a big overlap between the two, and hence people have sort of thought about, could vitamin D deficiency have a role in the whole the COVID illness and the cytokine storms that you get, you know, which is important in the pathogenesis of the COVID-19 disease.
And it's the fascinating thing. It's very difficult to, as you said, exclude one particular thing, because what you have is a cohort of people that are more prone to deficiency because of various different other factors in their life, and therefore which bit is more important.
Absolutely. And the same individuals are at increased risk of developing more severe COVID illness. We know that the mortality has been disproportionately higher amongst the BAME population in the UK and amongst many health professionals, be it nurses or doctors. You know.
So has the guidance changed at all during the pandemic with regards to vitamin D intake?
So at the end of last year, the Department of Health and Social Care asked NICE to do a quick review of the available literature to see if we needed to alter the recommendations for vitamin D supplementation during this COVID-19 pandemic. And following this review, the only change which was made was that everybody should be encouraged to take supplements during autumn and winter months, but those who are at increased risk, for example, the BAME population, those who are institutionalized for whatever reason or shielding, should consider taking supplements throughout the year.
And that makes a lot of sense. You know, who would have thought at this point, well, I certainly didn't think we would still be in quite a severe lockdown, you know, 10 months into this journey. So, you know, you think of all of the people that have been shielding for the vast majority of that time. And even if they were getting a relatively good amount from both sunlight and their diet, they will very much have been pushed into possible deficiency with all of those factors.
That's absolutely right. So I think for those reasons, it would be advisable to take supplements which are readily available from all good suppliers, whether it's health food outlets or pharmacies or supermarkets.
And one of the things we all always worry about supplementation is, can you take too much vitamin D? Is it possible to take too much?
Yes, so there are well-described cases of vitamin D toxicity from taking products which are very high or have been not been manufactured to the sort of the right, to this the stringent sort of requirements, for example, the MHRA requirements. But these are very few and far between. I think if you take the doses which are recommended, then it is very, very unlikely that anybody will get toxicity. But there are cases of toxicity which have been reported. And in my career, I've seen two or three children who have been poisoned with vitamin D through being given a huge pharmacological doses of vitamin D for because the child, for example, a classical example would be there's a slightly chubby child and the wrists are slightly swollen, look slightly swollen, and these children have been judged to have severe rickets and they're given a huge dose of vitamin D, and some of them have come in with high levels of calcium and symptoms of high calcium, which is, anorexia, passing too much urine, failure to thrive, and misery. But these are very rare, very rare. I'm talking about a 40-year career where I've probably seen a handful of such cases, you know.
Do you think that there's talk the public health advice is going to, people are actually going to be given supplementation, you know, supplements for perhaps for free of charge. Do you think that that's a wise decision to make? Or do you think that us as healthcare professionals getting the message out there to patients and families about the importance of vitamin D would be, I suppose, as important or more important?
I think that is a very important point. I mentioned earlier that in the BPSU RICET survey, 70% of children with rickets were not taking supplements as advised by whether it's NICE or Public Health England or other bodies such as the Royal College of Paediatrics and Child Health or the National Osteoporosis Society. And it is sad that in this day and age, and we are the sixth richest nation in the world, we are still seeing cases of rickets. This is a Dickensian condition. Mm-hmm. We're still seeing babies coming in with hypocalcemic seizures. So, you know, a few days after parents have taken their baby at home, this baby suddenly starts fitting, comes into hospital, and is found to have very low calciums. And more importantly, some of these babies develop a life-threatening complication of severe vitamin D deficiency, which is dilated cardiomyopathy. So the heart becomes large and flabby, doesn't pump the blood properly, and these babies present with heart failure. In the survey that I mentioned, we had four cases of hypocalcemic dilated cardiomyopathy. Sadly, two babies died. So when you have rickets, you have bone pain, you have muscle weakness, you have hypocalcemic seizures, I think it's high time that we started not only giving advice, but there's a mandatory provision of vitamin D supplements to at least the targeted group, the BAME populations who are at risk, and both to mothers during pregnancy and to infants after birth, to prevent all these consequences that I've mentioned.
So it must be very painful as a healthcare professional and as an eminent professor in the area to see something that is so avoidable with a very easy intervention.
It is. And going back many years, in 1980s, there was a provision of vitamin D to sort of eradicate rickets. It was given by health visitors to Asian babies and babies born to Afro-Caribbean mothers, and that led to a significant decline in rickets. And then in 90s and 20s, that, I don't know, complacency set in, that sort of provision stopped, and we're still seeing this important consequences of vitamin D deficiency. In many other countries where there is free provision of vitamin D supplements to the at-risk population, they don't see all these consequences of vitamin D deficiency, which we continue to see in the United Kingdom. Even a country like Turkey, which has provided free vitamin D to all infants under the age of 1 year, have more or less eradicated rickets. So it is possible to eradicate these things, but you do need to not only advise, but provide these supplements free of charge, which at the moment, the Healthy Start supplements are only available to mothers and infants who are on income support. And they're given vouchers, which they may go and exchange for vitamin D supplements for the mother or the infant, so they may buy formula or other things. So, you know, that is, in my opinion, we need clear guidance and free provision of supplements to all at-risk populations to eradicate these consequences of vitamin D deficiency?
Well, very much hopefully, because of the spotlight shining very clearly on vitamin D and the link with COVID-19, hopefully they'll have a wider positive public health message with regards to not just in a pandemic, but for all of our general health and well-being, particularly the at-risk groups that you've mentioned, that vitamin D is a fundamental building block for a healthy immune system, but a healthy population.
Absolutely. I think, I hope that will occur before I retire completely.
Well, I hope you don't retire for a very long time, because your career and your research, I've just been studying a few bits over the last week. It's fascinating. And also, I mean, I had no idea, I suppose, of the prevalence. You know, rickets, as you said, is a Dickensian disease. And the fact that we are now in 2021 and there are still children totally unnecessarily suffering from it. You know, as healthcare professionals, we all need to really focus on health promotion and avoiding such, you know, really horrendous diseases, as you've pointed out, that have such far-reaching health consequences generationally.
I think you're absolutely right. And not only that, as I mentioned, there are sort of potentially life-threatening consequences with hypocalcemic seizures and dilated cardiomyopathy in some of these infants.
Absolutely, which is just so sad. And for anybody listening, where would be the really excellent places that they could go and get more information on the subjects that we have discussed? Because we've only touched on it. It's a fascinating subject.
So there are a lot of guidances available from various sites, which I understand will be put at the as links at the end of the podcast.
It will, of course. Professor Zulf, thank you so much for a really fascinating chat. I think I could talk to you for about 3 weeks on this subject. And I hope all the healthcare professionals listening are able to take home, you know, we really need to do better by our patients and their families. And if COVID-19 can shine a light on vitamin D and make it even the brighter sunshine vitamin, then all the better. Thank you so much for joining me on The Beat today.
Thank you, April. It's a pleasure.
To keep up to date with future episodes of The Beat podcast from Nutritia, make sure you subscribe on whichever platform you listen to your podcasts on. For more updates on the show, as well as lots of other educational content from Nutritia, sign up to our newsletter at www.nutritia.co.uk. We'll be right back.